Hello, everybody. Good evening. I'm very pleased to see you all here. And things are being reorganized, and so we're not quite as organized as we usually are for these talks. But first of all, let me welcome you to this fantastic opera house. I know many of you are regulars. You probably all, some of you have been here many times. But if you haven't, we are incredibly lucky in this small city of ours to have an opera house of this caliber. I mean, this is, well, I actually always say that this is, yeah. I always say that this is the second, I mean, the Met is in a league all by itself in New York, you know, doing 425 performances a year or whatever. However, I always say that we're right after them. And Chicago and Houston may disagree, and if you're from either of those cities, forgive me. But we're very loyal to this wonderful, wonderful opera house, and the standards are fantastic. So you're in for a treat this evening. I'm hoping that some of you have seen this before or heard it before and know a little bit about it, but let me get straight into it. Tristan was included in the Arthurian cycle. It comes from those Arthurian legends, much later, actually, than the more familiar figures. You've probably heard, well, like King Arthur, of course, and you've heard of names like Galahad and Lancelot and Guinevere and so on. But without going into the academic details of the various countries of origin of this story, we can safely say that Wagner warmed to the mythical and chivalric origin of the story, wherever it actually originally came from. Just as he had used Lohengrin, we had Lohengrin here pretty recently, and I did the talks for that too. Of course, that's another part of that story. He was a knight of the Holy Grail, and the Holy Grail is definitely associated with King Arthur. So, but it did, not only, I should say, did it contain a passionate love story. This is our this evening's opera, Tristan. But there are also many elements that are the meat and potatoes, really, of dramatic, and in this case, Wagnerian operatic narratives. Let's see now. We have several water journeys. You Wagner fans will remember the Rhine journey from Götterdämmerung. And we have a handsome young couple. Well, you have that in pretty well all of the operas, don't you? That's not so unusual. But when somebody slips them a magic love potion, that's a slightly different story. Think of Romeo and Juliet. And of course, they're teenagers, of course, so they don't really need a love potion, do they? Then there's Donizetti's L'Elisir d'Amore, the elixir of love. Another thing, a potion, definitely a potion. You've got a vengeful older man, in this case, King Mark. Helpful servants, the two servants of the protagonists. Confusion, scenes of eroticism, I may say. Actually similar to the end of the first acts of Bohème, Butterfly, Otello. All of those have big love duets at the end of the first act. And they're pretty juicy love duets. So before we get to the story, I've got to give you a little bit of history here. Wagner had started on his monumental masterpiece, the cycle of four musical dramas, The Ring. And he had completed the first two when he fell in love with Mathilde Wesendonck, the wife of a rich silk merchant, Otto. History has never quite related if this grand passion was actually consummated or not, but it continued for a long time, whatever, and you can make your own opinion on that after you listen to this music, which is definitely music written for Mathilde and for Wagner, expressing exactly what he was feeling for her. He was so obsessed that he actually stopped working on The Ring and wrote, first of all, the Wesendonck Lieder, which is a little group of songs which he considered a sort of sketchbook for Tristan. And then he wrote this massive paean to passionate, romantic, spiritual, and physical love. The affair fizzled out eventually, although somewhat surprisingly, Otto, the husband, kept on supporting Wagner. He kept on being a donor and helping him out. actually, even before he got back to the ring, he knocked off another little opera called Meistersinger, a five-hour job. And so he was pretty hardworking, was Wagner. By this stage, we're going to get to the story, don't worry, but I have to give you a little bit of background here. Wagner was writing in his mature style. And I should mention that Western music, as we know it from Monteverdi through Bach, Handel, Beethoven, Schumann, all of those, had always been tonal. Well, that is to say, involving harmonies and harmonic progressions that we can recognize. And you remember Do, Re, Mi, Sound of Music and all that stuff. That's the scale which we all recognize. And even when composers stray wildly with discords and off into distant keys, it nearly always comes back to that. And that's the sort of core of tonal music. His early operas, Flying Dutchman and Tannhäuser, are pretty conventional in the use of harmony. They're still very good, but conventional. This is where things started to change. He was approaching a period where the traditional sounds were getting further and further from the tonic scale that I've just described. He took that to the very limit here, and we're going to get to that in a minute. And even the opening is almost impossible to pin down to a particular key. Hence, what is called in music history and music theory classes, the Tristan chord. And amazingly, there have been books written about this chord. I'm going to play it to you in just a minute. And it is a very, very mysterious and difficult to grasp chord because you really can't tell with your ear where it's going and what key it's in. And that's what the whole thing is all about. Now, at the time, imagine, all you've heard up to here is Beethoven. Well, Beethoven wrote a few discords, but whatever. Beethoven and Schumann and Chopin, that's the sort of music that was in people's ear. And they suddenly heard this. I have to tell you that Clara Schumann, who was one of the great concert pianists of the time, exclaimed on hearing this work, "This is the most disgusting thing I've heard or seen in my whole life." I disagree. Let's just go straight on to example one, please. There. What's that chord? It doesn't resolve. It just gets more complicated. So where are we going? Your ear is complete, thank you so much, but your ear is completely confused. You really don't know where it's going. It's a mystery. And if I had a semester to be able to lecture on classical music from 1860 to 1920, I could outline what was happening to so-called classical music after Wagner. It all revolves really around what composers tried to do to avoid being like Wagner. But instead of that, let's get back to that opening and that mysterious, unrecognizable chord. It's difficult to identify, and as each note is added, as you heard, it seems only to resolve into another mysterious and unrecognizable chord. And the miraculous thing is that throughout the work, it comes back in some form, always unresolved, and until the very, very end, where finally we have a breathtaking climax, and that word in every sense of the word, actually, which does finally resolve those continuing discords. The whole opera then subsides into a gorgeous B major chord, and we're back into the land of tonality. That final chord, which you're afraid you're going to have to wait 4.5 hours before you hear it, That chord is what Strauss, who adored Wagner, called the most beautifully orchestrated B major chord in the whole history of music. So, how do I get this story? Let me see. I've got not a whole lot of time, but I have to tell you this story. It's part of my brief. We want you to hear the story, and it's going to help. The program is fantastic, but let me give you a little bit of the story as clearly as I can in a few minutes. Tristan is a noble knight, and he goes with his friend Courvenal to Ireland to take Princess Isolde as an intended but unwilling bride for his uncle, King Mark, back to Cornwall. I know, actually already a dangerous premise, isn't it? Sending a handsome young knight to a beautiful young woman to secure her unwilling consent to marriage to an older man. It's trouble before you've started, isn't it? Anyway, there is also old history, and I have to tell you a little bit about this. Believe me, there's a lot more detail in the opera itself. But let me tell you, Tristan has killed Isolde's fiancé, Morold. This was in the past. And he was also wounded, and it happens that Isolde had great healing powers. And so she was actually looked after by Isolde. Imagine, this is the guy who's just killed your fiancé. She feels like killing him, but she looks into his handsome face and can't quite bring herself to do it. So, that's where we're standing, and Isolde asks her maid, they're very conflicted, these two, and Isolde asks her maid, Brangaena, to administer poison to them both. They are both prepared, as is the way of operatic heroes and heroines, especially the noble ones, to die if necessary. Consequently, when they are given the deadly potion, they each drink, not really unwillingly, but Brangaena, not wishing to see these beautiful, handsome young people die, and she can see that they're in love with each other, instead gives them a love potion. Whew. Well, you know what a good love potion will do. They took a good long look at each other and fall into each other's arms, not at all dead. End of act one. But this is not the end of first act passionate love scene that I was talking about, like in those other operas. That is coming up. Act two. So now we're in Cornwall and in King Mark's cozy little castle. Isolde is waiting anxiously for her lover, Tristan, not for her husband or husband-to-be, King Mark. She's waiting for Tristan, but King Mark has decided to go off hunting. Whoopee! Time to get together for a rendezvous. And now his signal is when the torch is extinguished. She welcomes him, which she does, of course. She welcomes him passionately, just the way that all men like to be welcomed. The torch is out, cue for passionate love music, some of which I'm going to play for you at the end of this little talk. This is the big love scene. It's in Act Two. It's a very famous scene. It must be one of the longest, I think, in all opera. I haven't timed it, but I reckon it's a good half an hour, this scene. Just that scene, which is a full act of any Puccini opera. The first part, they're so excited and ecstatic to see each other, and they make much of the light metaphor, right? The torch has gone out, it's nighttime, night and day, all of that sort of stuff. And then it gets darker and quieter, and they settle into the real deal, which is a fantastic love scene with absolutely amazing music in it. it's characteristic of the whole work. And you'll hear one of the things that this opera is famous for is the way that it rises towards a climax and then goes back again, and then rises back up again and goes back again. And, well, you all know what that seems like and what that is going to suggest. And that's exactly what is happening here. It's a very erotic love scene and an absolutely... One of the great love scenes in opera, I have to say. So, even though she has posted Brangaena to keep watch, there is trouble ahead because King Mark comes back early, and not before they've had this huge, long night of love, I suppose one would call it. Mark is angry. You might expect that, mightn't you? He finds his bride-to-be in the arms of another man. And Mello, a courtier and former very good friend of Tristan, who not only holds one of those pesky little grudges, but also actually has his eye on Isolde. She's very beautiful, and he thinks that she's very lovely too, and he's rather taken with her. He accuses Tristan of treachery to the king, and Tristan cannot deny it. He's their noble, they're truthful, he cannot deny it, and he does the right thing, inviting Isolde to join him in the only honorable way out. She accepts, but before they can get their hands on some poison or a handy sword to do the deed, Mello attacks Tristan, who falls wounded into the arms of his friend Courvenal. End of Act Two. By the way, you will be amused to learn that when I was putting this talk together, my spell checker had a lot of trouble with the name Mello, M-E-L-O-T. It kept on thinking I was talking about Merlo. So, Tristan is mortally wounded, and Isolde, only Isolde, who, as we now know, has semi-magical powers of healing, can save him. Courvenal, his friend, asks a shepherd, we're in the third act now, by the way, asks a shepherd to keep watch at sea. They look out in the hope that a ship will come, of course, bearing Isolde, but no ship is to be seen. Finally, good news, here comes a ship. Tristan gets up from his sickbed, tears off his bandages, just before Isolde finally does rush in, but it's too late. He dies in her arms. But wait, here comes another ship. It is King Mark. Courvenal kills the wretched Mello, who is by this time a baddie, but he is himself killed by the king's soldiers. Whew, so that's three down. With just Isolde to go. King Mark appears and is overwhelmed with grief at the sight. Brangaena explains to Isolde that Mark has come to pardon the lovers, but Isolde can't hear anything. Her only wish is to join her beloved Tristan in death and sinks in ecstasy to die on his body. Maybe you've heard the phrase Liebestod, love, death. This is it. So I wouldn't want to spoil that ecstatic final aria, which is one of the most famous in all opera, and certainly one of the most famous in Wagner. So I'm not going to spoil it for you. You have to wait for it. But believe me, you know, I think some of you, if you go to symphony concerts, you will have heard the prelude, and you may have even heard this particular Liebestod. The Prelude and Liebestod. You've heard that probably in your ear. It pops up in orchestral symphonic programs. It doesn't mean nearly as much as when you have been here and had gone through 4 hours until you get to it. And at that moment, it is absolutely devastating because you're right in it by then. And this is a story of such passion and tenderness and sadness, and when that aria starts in the last half hour of the opera, it is a wrenching, literally a wrenching and very, very emotional moment. So I'm not going to play you that. I am going to play you a little bit from the second act, which is the slightly happier love music. Well, happier in that they're both alive. Love music. and I note the little rising phrases going up towards the climax and then coming back and going on and on. So you'll have to wait to hear that really in its full glory in the Liebestod at the very end. But here is that little bit of from Act Two, and this is just really a teaser of what this music is all about. Example two, please. At that moment is when they're interrupted. And that is the moment at the end where it doesn't have that wretched discord, which doesn't resolve. The music up till this time, all of the love music is unresolved until you get to the very end and you have the very climax of it. And it's not to say that the whole music in all of the opera is sort of atonal or unresolved. Oh, not at all. There are all the parts of the narrative where normal things are going on. You know, fights are happening and this is happening. You have tonal music, but all of the love music is this much more mysterious, and it all works for all the way through this very, very long opera until you get to that moment at the very end, which is in every way climactic. So I have to tell you one last little thing before I go. When on my 21st birthday, my mother, who is a musician, decided that she was going to give me a box set of Tristan. It was LPs, of course, in those days. A box set of Tristan conducted by Furtwängler with Flagstadt singing, which is pretty well definitive, although there have been many, many great recordings of this, but that is one of the ones that is considered to be unbelievable. And so that was given to me on my 21st birthday by my lovely mother, who thought it was time that I would grow up and learn a thing or two. And so this opera, I think, has some of the most ecstatically beautiful love music in any opera, and we all know there's plenty of that in opera, you know, and we all have our favorite operas, and there is wonderful music. There's really nothing quite to match Tristan in terms of ecstatic, incredible, passionate, spiritual, and physical love music. So have a wonderful evening. Thank you for joining us. And I went to the dress rehearsal, and you're going to have a treat. It's wonderfully well sung, and it's a lovely production. I think you're going to have a wonderful evening, and thank you for listening to me.